So welcome back to the JBST podcast for triathletes, duathletes, sportive riders, road racers, time trialists, mountain bikers, all the fitness enthusiasts out there. Whatever your distance and whatever your event, this podcast aims to make you smarter and faster. So hello again. We are back with the 174th episode recorded October 2022. And we welcome Stefan van der Vloot, co-founder and CEO of Flow Bio. How are you?
I am good, Joe. Thanks for having me. And it's fantastic to hear your voice for the first time, because I think up until now we've just been exchanging emails and texts and everything but voices.
Yeah, I think Messenger, WhatsApp, email, text. I mean, we
kind the of whole see, the whole gamut, exactly.
So your company's moniker, data-driven hydration for serious athletes. So explain to people that may not be aware or have heard or seen or kind of in this area of if you like hydration management, what is Flow Bio?
Yeah, so Flow Bio, how do I explain this? Because we're kind of building a new category. So we're having to dub, when you build a new category, you kind of have to like name the category. So we're calling it performance wearables. So it's the next generation of wearable technology where our hardware, essentially, because it's a full stack hardware software, but the hardware, which we call the Flow Patch, is giving you a deeper level understanding of the human body with regards to your biomolecular data. So you know, you can kind of think of Garmin or Whoop or Polar or any of these devices, you know, Apple Watch, are quantifying data above or near the skin surface. We're getting data well below the skin surface. So, you know, the roadmap is looking at like cortisol, lactate, cytokines, minerals and vitamins, naturally hydration. So, you know, electrolyte, advanced hydration. So potassium, magnesium, calcium, fluid loss, you name it. And the whole purpose of Flow Bio is we really want to develop the kind of what I call the USB-C port to the human body to give us as athletes that deeper level understanding of our unique needs and inputs and how that relates to our performance to essentially take out luck and guessing out of the equation and replace it with confidence and data. So yeah, the first kind of two analytes, as you mentioned, Joe, that we're looking at is total body fluid loss, sweat rate, and total body electrolyte loss, specifically sodium, because that's the biggest electrolyte of importance when it comes to your performance and dehydration, given it's such the highest concentrated electrolyte of all three, compared to magnesium and potassium. And yeah, we then present you with that data. We're capturing it in real time with the Flow Patch, which is a two-part device. You have the shell, which is the reusable aspect, which clicks onto the SUS, which is the single-use sensor, which kind of it's in its name. It's a single-use device, which once it captures sweat off the skin surface, analyzes the sweat, and then the shell picks up the signals from the sensor and then transmits that to your head unit, to your watch, and your phone. And then, yeah, the whole purpose of the system is to give you a data-driven approach to hydration, i.e. you know exactly to the milliliter and milligram resolution what your body has lost or what your body is losing so that you can replace it during the time or after the time to perform better, recover quicker, or prepare for the work to be done.
Okay, so prior to us recording this, we had a little chat and there was some names bounced around and some things that are going on. What can you reveal that's perhaps already out there of the extent to which you're dealing with the sort of cutting edge, or the extent to which this is already in the background being already mixed into the mixture of elite sports athletes? Is there any kind of at present, not necessarily exclusive, but something whereby, you know, where's this at the moment? Because obviously technologies appear and people say, oh, look at that, you know, whether it's a Filippo Ganna 3D bike, which obviously has had, you know, maybe a year or years in a sense with the 3D printing systems that have obviously been evolving like mad. You know, we see these things and they appear, but obviously at times suddenly something breaks above the threshold and people realize, oh, that's going on. And up to then, a handful of people knew and nobody else did. Is there anything that you can say about the system at present which gives people an idea as to where this is right now?
Yeah, and you know, you're exactly right. Like, things don't just appear from one day to the next. There's a lot of kind of legwork and stuff behind the scenes, years in advance in most cases, before that kind of moment that it has its glory. So, you know, the flow patch is nothing special. It's the same. We went through the same process. So my co-founder and I, Giovanni, we founded it, or we founded Flow Bio about 2 and a bit years ago. So, you know, perfect timing. Just before COVID, just before lockdown one, literally the weekend before lockdown one is when we met. We confirmed the idea during lockdown one, and then we got our first bit of seed capital just off the back of lockdown one. So we managed to somewhat create a lab just before lockdown two happened. But yeah, you know, this is a perfect example of there is no right time to create a company. So you might as well just create one at any given time, because like, there's no right time. Perfect doesn't exist. but yeah, so we founded it way back when, and the first thing we started to do to kind of validate that this was a problem, you know, was just first anecdotal evidence just from my experience as a competitive athlete, but also kind of those around me in my network. So my coach, Stu Hayes, who was the domestique for the Brownlee brothers in 2012.
Yeah.
So Stu was one of my first protocols just to kind of pick his brain around this problem, his experience as an elite athlete around hydration. And yeah, I kind of just used my network to interview a bunch of athletes, both professional, elite, and amateur. So that was kind of our first bit of like, okay, this is something people are interested in. So now let's kind of have them put their money where their mouth is. We rolled out what we called the sweat test kit, which was an at-home kit, which included a Tegaderm, a bunch of syringes, a bunch of vials, and a very lo-fi app, which was essentially a wrapper of Google Sheets. And we had athletes do sessions. They would then put in their body weight pre-post exercise, their bottle weight pre-post exercise, and they would syringe out the sweat from the Tegaderm that they wore during exercise. They would put that in a vial, and they would ship that vial to our lab in London for analysis. And all of this would, you know, happen with probably like a 2-3 week delta, because Royal Mail and Brexit, et cetera.
Yeah, and I remember I did that, and some of them actually some of them actually got there. One lot went astray, and I think one lot got there. But yeah, I know what you mean. It was a
I forgot that. Yeah, you were actually on the sweat test kit. Yeah, precisely. So you would know it very well. It was a very arduous process, and to be quite honest, the sweat test kit wasn't anything new. This is how the industry has been doing sweat analysis for consumers for decades.
Yeah.
Like there's a company called, what are they called now? Time something. I can't remember. Well, Levelin is one in the United States. So Levelin has been doing this for a while. A Best Site is the other one that I'm thinking of. So companies have been doing this. It's just like super, super painful and time consuming and very manual. But it was our way of proving, okay, if people are willing to go through this, like, literally you couldn't script a worse protocol for some athletes to have to do. If athletes are willing to do this and they do it repetitively, so I think we had around 74% of people who partook in the sweat test kit asked for more vials and like religiously did more and more testing with us. So we were like, okay, cool. 70% of a population of people who are super keen. So in theory, like, you know, they're willing to do anything to get the data, and 74% of them are indeed willing to do that. That's a pretty high number for us to have confidence to move forward and actually like develop the sensor. And one of those athletes, and this kind of comes back to the point of your question, which elite athletes are you working with and kind of how did you get here? One of those athletes were the Brownlee brothers. So Nigel Mitchell, their performance, I'm just going to call him their performance guy. They're Olav basically. He's super, super savvy and very, you know, that's why they work with him. He's looking at all of the different angles of where they can get performance. And this was, so he was interested in understanding the Brownlee's response to his heat training protocols that he would set them. And he had come up with a way, or not like per se only him, but he identified very early on that the data we were getting could help him understand whether Ali and Johnny were acclimating based on his heat training.
Okay.
Because what happened, as you start to heat acclimate, your body responds to it. So your sweat rate will increase quite drastically. Your sodium concentration will decrease. So it's a really cool graph, which over time, you know, one curve goes up, one curve goes down. So they have an inverse relationship. But it makes logical sense if you think about it, because what's happening is, as you're subjecting your body to hotter environments, you know, the reason we sweat is to dissipate heat, right? It's a thermoregulatory response.
Yeah.
So as you're subjecting your body to a hotter environment, either it overheats and dies, or it adapts and survives. And if there's one thing about the human body, it adapts and survives. Like, the whole purpose of the human body is to maintain homeostasis. So naturally, in order to function in a hotter environment, your body learns to sweat more and is more effective at dissipating heat quicker, i.e. your sweat rate increases, the amount of water you're losing increases to do so. But your body also gets more efficient at reabsorbing sodium. So instead of losing more sodium with that increased sweat rate, your body is actually getting more efficient at retaining that sodium, again, to maintain homeostasis, because of that electrical balance that we need. And yeah, that's what he was looking at. So we were kind of there like, oh my God, this is so exciting. Like, is he going to determine what Johnny needs to drink on the course based off of the data we're giving? He's like, no, guys, I literally, you know, I don't actually, he at the time was like, I don't believe in that. I don't think you need this data to make personalized hydration solutions. Like, I don't think that's necessary. Now, after he's seen the data from the flow patch to the real-time device, he's completely pivoted his belief system there. And he actually really thinks that there's value there. But at the time, you know, with, no matter how much kind of convincing I could try and make him do, and like, oh, this would be such a cool story to tell investors, like the Brownlee brothers are literally drinking based off the data we're giving them. You know, I couldn't tell the story because that's not what was happening. What was happening was he was looking at, was the sodium concentration going down? If so, that meant that they were adapting to his heat training protocol. But yeah, we've been working with the Brownlees kind of almost since the get-go. They've entrusted us a lot. And, you know, we're forever grateful for them and continue working with them. Honestly, like, they are phenomenal people. Especially, I really enjoy Johnny. I have to say, of the two brothers, Johnny is such a relaxed individual. Like, you know, Ali, he's like the best of the best. So, you know, he's naturally a lot more serious about his business. Not to say that Johnny isn't, but Johnny's personality, I've had the pleasure now of spending quite a bit of time with him through kind of traveling with Super League. And he's just such an amazing stand-up individual. Like, yeah, you know, I'm really rooting for the guy. Yeah, I think Ali Brownlee, it's going to be very exciting once he recovers from his injury. It's going to be super exciting to see what he does next year in Kona. Because that guy, he leaves no stone unturned. Like, he is so on top of everything. It was really funny. Nigel was like, you know, you don't really tell Ali what to do. You simply give him choices and he makes them. Because he is so smart. I remember we were sat down in the kitchen. Adam Halliwell, our lead electronics engineer, had the laptop in front of him because Ali kind of wanted to see what the data looked like in its raw format. And he points to the laptop. He's like, oh, cool. You guys are using the accelerometer. And Adam was like, how do you know that? And Ali was like, oh, because it's the heading of that table. Like, that's the accelerometer kind of heading. So he knows his shit. It's awesome. It's such a pleasure working with people who are just like super on top of everything. But yeah, so we've been working with the Brownlee brothers for some time. We've been working with Movie Star for some time for kind of helping them with the sweat test kit last season. We're now getting ready for the next season with in the cycling world. So there's a couple of, we can't disclose exactly the other teams that we're going to be collaborating with, but there's a lot of interest from the pro, from the World Tour Peloton. We've got kind of Lucy Charles on the wait list to receive her flow patch with bait, with Batch 2. A couple of other high profile triathletes on the PTO course. So yeah, there's a whole range, and we've kind of started to branch out a bit more into other sports. So Tom Evans, UTMB third place athlete, we met at Super League London. Our COO, who is very good at his job, was like, we need to just go and speak to him. That guy could definitely benefit from what we're doing. So he just went over to Tom. They started a conversation. He then laid it up for me. I then came in and basically, and Tom was like super keen to get involved. And Sophie Caldwell, his partner, both of them are also going to be receiving their devices from Batch 2. So yeah, there's a nice spread. And now that I'm in the US here, we're starting to kind of have collaborations or conversations with like Team USA Cycling, Team USA Triathlon, all of the like the performance kind of circuit. So all of the Olympic athletes or the to-be Olympic athletes. So yeah, it's a really, really fun environment. And it's also just really cool seeing the different personalities in the sport. Like no one pro athlete is the same in the sense of
Absolutely.
they're all super hungry for performance, but they all come at it from a different angle, and their intensities are all on a whole, like on a wide spectrum.
Absolutely. And that brings us on to it's a perfect sort of segue on to the fourth question that I posed to you, which was, how do you keep the balance when the intensity of dealing with elite sport, elite sports people, it's so taxing, it can be all consuming. How do you balance that on a personal level, and also maybe on a business level, such that you keep your mojo going in the right direction? How do you keep balance?
It's a good question. I think, personally, I think it's not hard because I myself am one of them. I'm a pretty intense competitive athlete myself. Like I'm by no means professional. But the same qualities that they have, I have. So for me, it's a very, yeah, I like we were saying kind of offline, I think Alan Murchison, the performance cycling chef, he captured it very well. Mediocrity is boring. Excellence is exciting. And it's the same for me. Like I really enjoy passionate people. And I think, you can't be picky. Passion comes with high intensity, right? That's literally what passion is. So I love it. Like I wouldn't want anything else. Like if there was an elite athlete who wasn't passionate, I would worry for them. Because I think you can't not be. And also just like the sacrifices these people make, and this is really what it, yeah, it's kind of like a sticking point or a very personal point. When you have this discussion around like pro athletes should be happy with what they earn. Like they're earning a good living. Like they shouldn't complain. It's like, you have no idea what these people sacrifice. Like these people are sacrificing time with family. Like training camps are long times away from family, mostly, during like holiday periods where they're away from their loved one. Like that's freaking hard. Like that's not easy. They're subjecting their bodies. They're limiting social engagements because they just have to say no to lots of things because it's not compatible with their training, with their lifestyle, et cetera. So these people have sacrificed so much. Of course they're going to be high intensity because so much is on the line. And you have to respect that. You have to come at it from that angle. You have to empathize with that. And I think once you do empathize with that, then you don't even see it as high intensity. You just see it as like, yeah, this is their baseline. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if that kind of answers the question, but from my
Yeah,
end,
it does.
that's yeah. So that's kind of how I see that in terms of like how to deal with it from a business angle. And this is a really good question, and this is something that I've been able to contrast like elite sports or just the sport industry with like enterprise software. Like you couldn't have a more bipolar relationship. Like enterprise software is so cut and dry. Like there is no passion in enterprise software. And that's what scared me about being in that industry. It was just like, shit, if you haven't told already, Joe, I'm a very passionate person. And I was really mortified by the idea of being in an industry for the rest of my life, working, spending so much time working in an industry where you're just surrounded by people who just, honestly, for lack of a better phrase, for the most part, right? This isn't like, I'm not going to do a blank, like broad brush or broad stroke, but for the most part, people couldn't give a shit.
Okay.
And like, they don't care that it's a good product. They don't care that it's like what it does. They're just there because their boss told them to go procure a piece of software which either makes them money or saves them money.
I see.
And that was really hard for me, just to kind of like go into a workplace every single day where, I don't know, you're just like, you could tell that people just were there mostly just to kind of collect a paycheck. Because also, like, in their defense, I was one of them too. It's so hard to fight the system. It's so hard. Like I did this. I was like, I refuse to kind of sell out. So I'm going to, be who I am. And when I was at Facebook, I identified, so the product I was on, Workplace, which was like an enterprise product within a consumer company, I identified a pretty awesome opportunity where the product could have a lot of impact on the world, which was supporting not-for-profits. So the software we developed at Facebook was a communications tool, a collaboration tool, and the people who could benefit it from most were not-for-profits who have so many volunteers federated across the entire globe, disconnected. But like, if they were connected, if they were able to share information easily, then the impact that they could have would be phenomenal. So my predecessors before me, when it wasn't really an official like structured thing, one of our first customers in our team was Save the Children. And all of the stories that we would tell in sales pitches from like, how is, what are they called? Dominoes. How are Dominoes using Workplace versus how is Save the Children using Workplace? It was really like, okay, cool. Dominoes is using it to like, make sure, where did that Miss Pizza go? Okay, how? Wow, how exciting. Save the Children are literally using it to help children get out of war-torn environments. Like, holy, like you could not think of a more impactful use case for software. So I was like, we need to scale this. We need to make an organized effort behind this. And my boss was like, that is not your job. Your job is to focus on the Benelux markets. Don't be a problem, And I was like, no, screw you. This needs to happen. So I went behind her back, probably cost me my job at the end of the day. I went behind her back. I made it a thing. I coordinated with Facebook for Good, which was like the wider body within Facebook who work with or who are responsible for the NGO sector, and we made an official thing. And still to this day, some of the best stories are from our not-for-profit customers. But I had to do that because I needed to see passion again in my job. The thing with passion is it quickly goes over professional boundaries. Like I've never been to the kitchen of any of my customers when I was at Facebook. And immediately one of our first customers, we went to their kitchen. So I think when you're in an industry where passion is so inextricably like connected with the profession, you do cross, you're there with them on race day. You're there with them, their families. So I think it's finding that balance of like, where do you draw the line and where do you not actually want to draw the line? Where do you actually want to be a different kind of brand? And say it's okay that, you can ask anything of us and we'll be there because you ask anything of yourself. So I think that's something we're actively doing right now. It's like, how do we build this brand differently to other brands? So one of our objectives internally is, how are we the best company athletes work with from a professional standpoint? Like, how do we beat all the other brands out there today in terms of athlete experience? How do we go above and beyond for athletes? And one example of that is something we're exploring with the PTO. So one of my assumptions as a non-professional athlete coming into this industry was, if you're a professional athlete, you have everything sorted. everything that's a known area of performance gains, you've got it covered. From your nutrition to your recovery to your hydration to your, you know, training, everything is like to a T perfected. That was my assumption. Now that I'm in the space, I see that that's only really the case for like the top 1% of athletes.
Absolutely.
And most of that is because they're the only ones who can actually really afford that. So we internally, we call it like your performance system, right? So in order to really excel as an athlete, you need to have a system around you. You need to have a nutritionist, a coach, a strength and conditioning specialist, a dietitian, all that stuff. And in order, you know, to actually put that in place, it's very time consuming and it's very expensive. And that's really what we're here to do. But we thought we were only doing it for the amateurs because we thought the professionals already had it down.
Yeah.
So what we're now looking at exploring is that asset that we've created for amateurs. How do we extend that asset to professionals? And how do we extend it to them where they can actually make use of it, i.e. it's affordable? Because to me, you know, it's just a question of like reconsidering the business model. Instead of the athlete paying for it, someone else should pay for it. And why should they pay for it? What's the value for them? So Stuart, our COO, he has such a refreshing perspective about things. The first thing he always asks me is, what value does this have for our customer? Like, what's in it for them before what's in it for us? And if you think of any business model from that angle, you can find a solution on how to make it work. And that's what we're actively doing today. So I think that's how we want to be as a brand. Like, we don't really want to be this professional brand, which is like, no, you've crossed the line. Like, we don't do that. We're not going to go there for you, or that you're asking too much of us. Like, there is no, you're asking too much of us. It's on us to figure out how we deliver it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to add a sort of a layer of detail to your answer. Yeah, absolutely. When I get some athletes that people see, wow, they're amazing. Look what they must be doing. And then you dial into their knowledge about some of the perhaps specifics of, you know, even sports nutrition or sports supplementation, etc. And you realize it's not even, you know, they're athletes. They're not. They haven't sat there and read all the papers and know the data and know what data isn't valid because of what reason. And you sort of realize, ah, a heck of it is teetering on not necessarily, like you say, a real sort of performance system. It just happens to be they can perform, but they haven't crossed every T and dotted every I.
Yeah, I mean, to make all of us amateurs feel much better about ourselves and the systems that we don't have, and the you know, the expertise that we don't have. I'm not going to name names because I don't want to do that, but I'm still going to tell a story because I think it's such a fun story, or it's such a comical story. So one of the athletes we work with, before one of their biggest races of this season, they had to go to McDonald's to get salt packets on race day. Now, I think any athlete who races can empathize with how shitty that has to be. Because, you know, the stress that you're under on race day is pretty immense, right?
Yeah.
To then have to add on to the stress of like, oh my God, today's going to be hotter than I thought it was going to be. I don't have the salt I need to get through the course. I need to find salt. Where can I find salt at 5 a.m. in the morning?
Mm.
They went to McDonald's
And
literally rocked up and asked McDonald's for salt packets. We asked, how many salt packets did you get? You know, they're like, I don't know. We just grabbed a bunch. But like this is an elite athlete, one of their A races, and that's what they're doing. So like, and you know, I think we can all be, we can all rest assured that no one has everything figured out.
No. Again, a nameless story, elite athlete, elite runner athlete, and very, very elite. Okay, what's your strategy pre-race for caffeine? And the exact answer was, I just drink a cup of tea. And I was like, that's your caffeine protocol? Right. We need to do some, you know, we need to do some serious testing of this, and we're going to do it, you know, bang on, right. And they were amazed. But I think because maybe in a good way, the rollout of what was the sort of Team Sky dot every I, cross every T, and make some new I's and T's that people didn't even know were there, that gave the assumption that, oh, that's bound to trickle out to every, you know, every pro tour cycling group, every layer below those, every runner, every triathlete. And actually what you realize is a lot of times people aren't necessarily actually even doing a tenth of a percent of what some age groupers who are really, really dialed in can be doing, because they are almost, you know, make, should we say, making up for, you know, lack of elite talent by saying, well, I'm going to cross every T and dot every I, because yeah, that way I can get the most out of myself. And I think, yeah, it is interesting that, you know, there are probably multiple areas where people make the assumption that that athlete must be doing it. And not many people will go on record and say, oh, we didn't know that. Oh, we'll start doing that. So there tends to be this trickle of stories, or as you can see, these obviously are quite hilarious scenarios that you see. So let's leap ahead. What's your goal for the whole area of wearables, let's say 10 years from now?
Yeah, so really our roadmap, I always come back to that performance system. That is our roadmap. So we are looking at how can, so if I think of Flowbio, you know, everyone kind of thinks of Flowbio in a different way, but when I'm asked, what is Flowbio to you? To me, it's peace of mind for an athlete. That's really what we're building.
Yeah.
We're giving confidence through data to have peace of mind that, you know, over time, less and less things are down to luck and chance and error, or random error, sorry. So the way I think about the roadmap, and, you know, I get challenged internally to like really start presenting that roadmap because everyone wants direction. So that's something I've recently been doing. I lean back onto the performance system. I say, look, if you observe an athlete's performance system, there's all these different modules in that system, right? You, Joe, are one of those modules. We are one of those modules right now. How do we tie together those modules in the most intuitive and natural way without the athlete having to become an expert in any one of them? So this is really the vision of Flowbio. It's, you know, I always compare, or I always make the analogy to what Apple did for personal computing. You know, Apple did nothing special for personal computing. They literally just put a box around it. And what I mean by that is the personal computer existed before Apple existed. Apple simply scaled the industry. How did they scale the industry? They were the ones who were like, look, guys, realistically, in order for this technology to make it to the mass market, you cannot expect people to source their own components and put them together. Like that's just stupid. You know, it's our job to source those components. It's our job to weld them together. It's our job to put a box around it. And it's our job to package it and ship it and market it. That's our job. Mm-hmm. And in that, charge a pretty penny. And it's the same thing for us. I think performance systems up till now, they exist. You can go out there and craft your own performance system. Athletes do. But you're going to be spending thousands and thousands of pounds, tens or hundreds of hours of trial and error, trying to find the right people, see if it works, see if it doesn't, et cetera, et cetera. It's basically, performance system is where personal computing was before Apple came into the game. And that's really where we see ourselves. We want to come into the game and productize it, simplify it, and package it in such a way that you don't have to be the expert, but you derive the benefits of the experts. So that's kind of where we're going. In 10 years time, we're going to be so much more than just data-driven hydration for athletes. Like you won't recognize Flowbio in 10 years time in terms of where we started from. But we will definitely be in your corner as an athlete or as a performance individual, helping you squeeze every single ounce out of the orange and giving you perfect confidence when you do that, that there is nothing more to do. You are doing everything. And if you follow the guidelines that the technology is providing you with, you know, you're golden. That's where Flowbio is in 10 years. And I think it's this really interesting. So we have this thesis internally, which we're trying to like start educating our investors and future investors with too. I don't think this is a general consumer product. And define general consumer. I don't think this is for like the 300 million people that use an Apple Watch, right? Because technology, so it's this ever like ever questioning, or this ever, you know, existing question of, does technology make you a healthier person? or does technology make a health conscious person healthier?
Okay.
So, you know, it's at the end of the day, technology is a tool. It is not a result. So technology allows you, for those who want to use the tool, it allows you to use it best. Like, I have power tools in my garage because my father-in-law, when we moved to Texas, was like, you have to have power tools, right? So we have some of the best tools in my garage. I don't use them because I'm not motivated to. I'm not a handyman, right? So I can have the best tools to my availability, but I they're wasted on me, right? Whereas maybe down the road, there's someone who is building tree houses with like a hammer and nail, and they could really benefit from the tools that I have, but they're wasted on me. They're golden on them.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing for wearables or performance wearables. It is a tool which, in the hands of those who know what to do with it, it's incredibly valuable. But I think in order for you to have those hands, you have to go through your own journey. You have, like, health is it's an intrinsic motivation. It is not a like, oh, I want to be healthier, let me buy an Apple Watch and I'll be healthier kind of thing. I think the people who benefit from technology are those who've made the choice that, like, I want to reap the benefits of technology. So the issue, how does that relate then to like a company in 10 years time? We have to be very patient and very kind of strict with ourselves, in the sense of we have to wait for people to come to us or to be ready for us, not the other way around. Because you can spend so much money trying to educate the people who just aren't ready yet to hear your message. You can spend so much money and just like, no, you really need this. And they're like, awesome, I do, because I also want to be an athlete. Like, who doesn't? Who doesn't want to be like a performance individual? Like, it's a phenomenal aspirational goal. The issue is not yet, or maybe never. And that's also okay. But you as a company have to admit the fact that you will not make everyone a customer. And that's okay. So I think our biggest challenge in 10 years time will be us holding ourselves to account of this thesis, and us being very strict with ourselves with that thesis. Because I do think that that is the correct play, but it's very hard to live up to it, because there's many temptations along the way. But I think the best example right now that's happening live that you can tune into any second is Peloton. Peloton they're going down pretty quickly.
Yes.
And why? It's because they initially, John Foley built an amazing premium brand for people who, you know, were time short, but like really motivated to stay healthy and stay in shape. So Peloton was like, I have the product for you. You don't even have to leave your living room, but you can maintain your healthy lifestyle. Now Peloton, because of, you know, for a whole host of reasons, like financial forecasting, yada, yada, they're now trying to meet those forecasts. And the only way they can meet those forecasts is they go to the general consumer. But the way that they go to the general consumer is a completely different product. And they're now skinning, in essence, what made Peloton Peloton. They're getting rid of all of that. They're going from premium to budget. They're going from closed ecosystem to open ecosystem. They're going from self-manufacturing to third-party manufacturing. And I think what the thing that brought people to Peloton in the first place, they're now being alienated by the brand. The people Peloton is now trying to go after don't even want or know that they need a Peloton, or once they have it, they won't repetitively use it. So they'll just return it, which is a massive nightmare because that's a very expensive product to arrange returns for.
Yeah.
And that's because they weren't disciplined in their thesis of we are for a certain individual. And, you know, the good thing about this space is that space is actually increasing. The amount of people becoming performance individuals is increasing. So, you know, if you look at the pie isn't changing. The percentage of that pie being your addressable market is increasing. But you can't go into that pie and start carving out sections that you want to exist that aren't there yet. You have to wait for that kind of to happen by itself. And I think, you know, we're seeing now in action when a company tries to take matters into their own hands and tries to force the situation. You know, I don't think Peloton will be around in 10 years. and they could have been.
It's there's a parallel. The early, and I mean the very early polar heart monitors, which were big chunky things on the wrist, and you could take it off and put it on a downloader. You had to physically put it on, and it went into the computer. And I've got some printouts from about, I think it's 1989, and to look at that at the time, people are like, why do you want to wear that, and what's the point of the printout? And then you see, as people saw that heart rate monitoring meant better health targets could be met, people could train more specifically, you could see, you know, post-race data, you could see even sleep data, etc., that they weren't in a rush, but they just kept on putting out this very reliable heart rate monitor. And, you know, and now heart rate is, wow, you know, okay, it's been superseded in some respects with the, if you like, the HRV measuring of somebody's preparedness. And also we now have power, whether it's biking, whether it's running, you know, we have power. But to see that point, they didn't rush to push it to market, but it was clear that the early adopters had these great chunky monitors on, and the knowledge that came from the early people eventually meant that, you know, now we can see some obvious retrospective data that was, you know, actually captured on polar monitors 2, 3, 4 decades ago, and now serves as a database to say, oh yeah, look at the perspective we've got now. Whereas then, you know, it's like, well, what's all these numbers? Well, we don't really know too much yet because we haven't got enough numbers, but give us time and we'll be able to see what we can see retrospectively.
Yeah. And I think this is key. I think, like, so I think our industry, unfortunately, is riddled with technology that isn't worth anything, but the athlete is a very vulnerable consumer because they're very desperate for performance, right? So if you just claim to have a product which will help performance, you know, the athlete will buy it. The trick then is, if you actually don't really aid in performance from a scientific principle standpoint, the trick in your growth is you have to sell it like wildfire. You have to, like, scale like there's no tomorrow, because eventually the truth will be out and, like, people will move away from you, right?
Yeah.
So that's one strategy. And that's, you know, some people do that strategy. Like, we're kind of seeing it in action with companies I'm not going to name. Yeah. And, you know, investors love it because they're like, oh my God, look at our revenue. Like, it's growing 400% year on year. It's like, and congratulations, in 2 years, it'll all be over. But, you know, whatever. Whereas from our side, you know, this is the whole thing that we always have this conversation with our investors and athletes and stuff. It's like, are you the first to market? And I'm like, no, we're not the first to market. And second of all, that is the wrong metric to optimize towards. Who cares about being first? Mm. What you want to do is you want to be last and final. And what I mean by that is you want to go to market at the point where, when you go to market, you have such a good product that it's not worth it for anyone to try and go to market after you, because you've just completely decimated the space for anyone else in the future. You've just cornered the market, and no one will be able to do it better than you. But the only way to do that is two things. One, you have to have a product which actually does something. And two, you have to do it best, which means in our case, you have to have the best sensor technology, which is why it's taken us so long to get to market. And it's why we've actually postponed our go-to-market, because we were not satisfied with the performance we were seeing in the lab for the longest of times. We were like, this is not good enough. And some of our stakeholders were like, ah, but you could still sell this. You could just package it in a different way. You could present the data differently. It's all in, like, visualization of the data. You can kind of, you know, you can kind of hide the fact that you're not the most accurate. And I'm like, no, like, that is not the kind of business we're building here. That is a business that won't last another 3 years.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same for Polar. They knew what they were onto, which is why they didn't need to, like, you know, I think growth, sometimes quick growth, in my opinion, is overcompensating for something.
Yes.
Yeah. Why do you feel you need to grow so fast? What are you overcompensating for? And that's my perspective of growth. One, it's like, it's incredibly dangerous. If you scale too quickly, you'll destroy what made you good in the first place, which is your company culture, your value system, your ability to attract and retain great people, what makes those people come to you in the first place, et cetera. All of that is very difficult to maintain if you're growing 400% year on year. And that's not what we're here for. We're here to be a globally relevant company in 30 years' time. We aren't here to be a hype which people don't even know about. They can't even remember the name in 5 years' time. And that's something that, like, that is something that I do keep repeating time and time again to both our team members and investors of, like, if you want to invest in a hype company, I can literally give you their names. I'll introduce you to their CEOs, invest in them, but you're not investing in us if that's what you're after. And that's just, it means that the path is slightly longer and harder, because there's less capital available to you, but, like, hey, that's fine.
Yeah, because you're building towards a performance system. You're not building towards a quick, should we call it a quick buck?
Yeah, exactly. A quick fix. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, everyone asks, what's the one thing I can do to get better performance tomorrow? It's like, honestly, there is no thing like that. Like, there is no magical pill. And I think that is actually a dangerous, now we're going into a bit of a deep philosophical space, but I think there's a dangerous thing happening to the kind of consumer psyche, or just our general, like, human psyche, that there is a magical pill.
Oh, yeah.
What's the magical pill out of climate change? Like, there is no magical pill. Like, we really fucked the system, and we have to first honor that we messed up royally. We need to all get on the same page, admit that we really messed up, and then we can start to solve the problem. But you can only do that once you really admit and be humble about the situation. And there's countless other examples of, like, oh no, but what's the magic pill? It'll all be okay. Like, all of our bad deeds of past will be undone with one magical pill. It doesn't work that way. And the same is for performance. There is no one magical pill. There is. It's called doping, and it's illegal. But yeah, it's. I think that's also just, like, a very dangerous thing that's happening to us. Is just, like, we want stuff tomorrow. And we think that that actually is true. We think that that can actually happen, and that's something that, yeah, we're kind of here to, like, we're here to be, I guess, the voice of reason, and sometimes, like, the tough love voice of, like, no, that just isn't true, and I guess people who gravitate towards that will find comfort in us, and people who don't, they can go to our competitor.
Absolutely. So to round off, this has been brilliant. This has gone in places that I didn't think it would go, but it's a really nice catch up. So how do athletes best engage right now with Flow Bio, and in what ways can they engage?
Yeah, so, well, right now, for the next year, so between now and next year, this time next year, we are in closed beta. So you, Joe, for example, you're one of the 100 athletes that we'll be working with for the next year. The reason we're doing that is because we really want to craft the best experience, and we don't think we can do that if we're working with more than 100 athletes at present with the resources we have internally. Said, we're going to be launching kind of batch one of the kind of first generation, like, available device around Kona next year. So that's kind of when we'll do the big announcement. We'll be on the big island. And we're only going to have 500 devices. So next year, 2023, October, we're going to have 500 devices available, and we're going to keep it to 500 devices. And then we're going to expand that probably October 2024. It's very limited. And again, we're doing that because we really want to maintain the experience and ensure that we're able to grow with our athletes, and do so in a responsible way. So, if you want to be one of those 500 athletes, and if being first or having access to new technology is important to you, you can go to flowbio.com, put your kind of name in the hat, join the wait list, and actually next week or week after, depending on kind of timings, we'll launch the reservation page where you can put your reservation down, to kind of put your name or commit your name to one of the 500 devices, and kind of take it off the shelf. So that's something that we'll be doing quite soon. But yeah, that's kind of for now into the next year. All those 100 devices that I mentioned in the closed beta, those have all been allocated. So if you're one of those lucky 100, fantastic. If not, don't worry, you can be one of the lucky 500.
Cool. That's really, really good. So we're almost up to 50 minutes. So that's a great recording. We're at the point where Filippo Ganna was obviously beginning to see that he had the record, but he might not squeeze a 57. But he obviously eclipsed Chris Borman's 56.375. And thank you very much for a great 50 minutes of insight into FlowBio. And at some point, we'll you know, catch up again and find out more about what you're doing. In the meanwhile, best of luck. And yes, anyone listening, it's the flowbio.com website is where you want to be heading. And thanks again for your time, Stefan.
Thank you, Joe. It's an absolute pleasure and awesome to hear your voice. Hope we can meet in person on my next trip to London. Get you over in the performance lab.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, bye. Have a good day.
And you. Cheers. Bye.
Ciao. Bye.
Thank you once again to Stefan for great insight into wearables. We'd love to hear your questions, so please use all the various ways. Contact via coachjoebeer.com. Also, you can tweet at coachjoebeer.com, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. It's all at coachjoebeer.com. Massive thank you for downloading, listening, and passing on this podcast to others you know, you train with, and race with. And look out for more podcasts coming soon. Train smart.